This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Life sustains itself by cell division. So does cancer. Breast cancer cells multiply faster because of CDK4/6 proteins. But what if we could block those proteins and stop runaway cell division? To that end, Dana-Farber scientists laid the foundation for CDK4/6 inhibitors, new drugs that are increasing the survival rate for many advanced breast cancers. Dana-Farber's momentum of discovery keeps finding new ways to outmaneuver cancer. Learn more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Russia threatens retaliation as Lithuania bars goods traveling by rail through its territory. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Will Bain, in for Victoria Craig. Good morning. Yeah, Moscow has summoned the EU ambassador over the move, which affects the transit of some goods to Kaliningrad, a Russian territory on the Baltic Sea coast. Lithuania has taken the action due to Russia's invasion of Ukraine, as the BBC's Jonathan Fruin reports.
The partial transport ban by Lithuania, which covers goods subject to EU embargoes such as steel and iron, was described as unprecedented by Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov. The Russian Baltic Sea exclave of Kaliningrad is sandwiched between Poland to the south and Lithuania to the north and east. Kaliningrad is of great strategic importance to Moscow. It houses the Russian Baltic Fleet and is the country's only ice-free European port. Lithuania has claimed it is bound by EU sanctions, part of a raft of measures intended to punish Moscow for its invasion of Ukraine. I'm the BBC's Jonathan Fruin for Marketplace.
Well, on the markets, it's been a bright start in Europe this morning after last week's pretty wild ride. Key benchmarks in Paris, Frankfurt and Milan are up in excess of 1% right now. Shares in London just up as well this morning, just over 0.5% too. That's despite the biggest rail strike in three decades kicking off across the UK. It's brought Britain's normally bustling morning commute on local and national trains, as well as London's underground, to a virtual halt. The worry from the government is that at a time of spiralling inflation, this potentially months-long rolling action by rail unions will be the first of a series of strikes over pay by sectors across the economy. The BBC's Nina Warhurst spoke to us from what's usually one of Britain's busiest rail stations.
Well, I'm in London Euston, which is a major hub, so it would connect on normal days to big hubs in the north of England, Manchester onto Liverpool, Preston and Glasgow in Scotland. Today, though, there are only 5 trains an hour, roughly.
In a nutshell, can you just explain to people around the world what the essence of the row is?
Nick Lynch, who is the General Secretary of the RMT, and that is the main railway union, he points to the fact that rail workers haven't had a pay rise for a few years, never mind in rate with inflation, full stop. Many are pointing to the fact that nurses, that teachers, many public sector workers aren't getting a pay rise above around 3%. And when we point to the fact that inflation in the UK is above 9% at the moment, is set to go even higher, you can see that the money doesn't add up. The argument is, though, if the government gives way to the rail unions, gives them a deal of, say, 7%. Where does that leave some of the other people who work for the state, the nurses, the teachers, the doctors?
And of course, in that kind of cost of living pot are businesses like hospitality, hotels, restaurants, cafes.
Yesterday I was up in Liverpool. Now that is a city globally renowned for the Beatles, and so there are so many tourists that come in and out of that city. And we actually met a Canadian tourist who'd arrived at Liverpool Lime Street, and all of her plans for her week in the UK had been scuppered because of the rail strike. She'd wanted to do a bit of a whistle-stop tour around the country. That won't happen now. If you think of the knock-on implication of spends, not just for tourists, but for day trippers into cities, people just heading out to meet friends for lunch, we're talking about hundreds of million pounds being taken out of the economy. As things stand, when I speak to passengers, there's a lot of sympathy at the moment. They look at wages of rail workers and say, yeah, they're not high enough compared to inflation. But what we might see as the weeks and months go on is further disruption and people feeling like the control over their social financial plans, over how they make money, is slipping away from them once again after 2 years of not feeling in control. So it's going to get very difficult if these strikes continue.
The BBC's Nina Warhurst at London's Euston Station. Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Will.
Now, when you think of Thailand, you'd probably think of its famous beaches, food and nightlife. Yeah, I'd rather be there right now too. But fun-seeking visitors are also warned about something else. It's harsh penalties for drug use, which has seen hundreds of foreigners locked up on long sentences. Now, though, in a striking turnaround, the government has recently completely legalised the use of marijuana, released thousands of prisoners and, as the BBC's Jonathan Head reports, sparked off a boom in weed-related businesses.
A stadium in northeastern Thailand, and people crowd around the visiting health minister, taking selfies with him. Each of them holds a donated pot plant. Anitin Chan Wirakun is a local hero here in Buriram because he's just delivered on an election promise made 3 years ago to legalise the cultivation and consumption of cannabis.
You see how many people have shown interest in entering into this kind of business. I think it's a victory for people's health.
That's the official view, that cannabis and its derivatives should be used in Thailand only for medical purposes. But the stalls at the side of the stadium were selling marijuana in every conceivable form, in drinks, on ice creams, in curries, and in jars of dried marijuana flowers strong enough to knock you out for the rest of the day. Come on, the law's changed and you can grow as much ganja as you want, intones a young man surrounded by a forest of seedlings. He has plenty of eager customers from villages near Buriram, which make little from their traditional crops like rice and sugar and yearn for better sources of income.
I am happy, really happy. Now villagers like us can grow it legally.
This is our veg room.
Nan Chit Chop is already ahead of the curve. She's the daughter of a powerful political figure in Buriram who's been lobbying for this change. She's been experimenting with different strains of cannabis to help local farmers determine what grows best. She's not convinced that marijuana can be confined to medical uses.
We all know from studying like other markets that recreational is where the money's at.
But even the medical side alone, says Tom Krusapon, a pioneering marijuana entrepreneur, has huge potential for a country whose hospitals and spas already attract large numbers of health tourists.
Providing medical tourism for cannabis will be a new industry for Thailand. So that's going to be a tremendous business.
Which is probably the main reason why Thailand, a country with a fearsome reputation for punishing drug users, has taken this dramatic step. Now, with all the money to be made from this cannabis craze, regulating it is going to be quite a challenge.
The BBC's Jonathan Head reporting from northern Thailand there in a slightly less sunny London. I'm Will Bain with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.